Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with publisher Zabel Gontar and F. Wayne Strohmeyer, one of the co-authors of Early Camellias in Louisiana, 1825 to 1860. Long lost treasures rediscovered. It is a real pleasure to welcome F. Wayne Strohmeyer and Zabel Gontar to The Reading Life. Wayne is chief of pathology at Our Lady of the Lake in Baton Rouge, and he and his wife Cheryl restored the plantation Chen Vert and created gardens with historically appropriate plants and patterns. Noted author and gallerist Zabel Gontar, whose most recent book is A Century on Harmony Street, The Kohlmeyer Cabinet Makers of New Orleans, is wearing a different hat today, that of publisher of Velicor Press, her new venture. The book we're talking about today is Early Camellias in Louisiana, 1825 to 1860, The Long-Lost Treasures Rediscovered. It's by Wayne Strohmeyer, co-created with Trenton L. James, with photography by John L. DeLeo. Hi, Zabel.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me back. I'm so delighted.
Oh, it's great to see you. And Wayne, it's so nice to meet you, even by phone.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having us.
Now, Zabel, you created some gorgeous books in the past already, and this time you're appearing as a publisher for this book about early camellias. So tell us how this partnership came about, because it took a village. It takes a lot of people to make a book this beautiful.
Yes, well, I've known Wayne and his wife Cheryl for a long time. They're devoted collectors and students of Louisiana artifacts. And so this inaugural project of Velicor Press was very much sort of reuniting with people I've worked with before. The Strohmeyers on the furniture books, Louisiana furniture books, and also Chandler Holden Middendorf and John DeLeo, Chandler being the graphic designer for the book and John the photographer. I'd already worked with them on other projects. So we knew each other, and Dr. Strohmeyer had reached out about advice about book publishing. So the conversation just devolved into me working on this book.
I know how to make a book. And it comes out December 16th, and
yes,
will be in stores the 17th.
It'll be in stores the 17th, all over New Orleans.
So this is an incredible compendium of information about a single flower. That's what I love about garden history, because it shows the quality of the obsession, you know, of how a person gets to where they are with this. Mm-hmm. So, Wayne, tell us a little bit about camellias, how they got to Louisiana. What are the various types? Where do they grow? And talk a little bit about their names, which are a kind of poetry.
Well, camellias, the Camellia japonicas that we're most familiar with, and the ones that are the most popular, originated in Asia, particularly in China and Japan. And they were cultivated there for many centuries. And it wasn't until the 18th century that they started to be imported to Europe. There were very few in the earlier parts of the 18th century, but in the latter part of the 18th century, the importation process really took hold. And ultimately, around the turn of that century, they started being shipped as well to America. As far as the names, there are so many of them, and there are a variety of names. A lot of the early ones were given Latin names. Mm-hmm. But others were named after various places and individuals over time. And now we're finding very creative names that may relate to songs or weather and scenes. And so it's quite a compendium. For the mm-hmm. most part, the ones in our book are the earlier names, many of them are Latin names.
And they're very romantic names for some of them, like Purple Dawn. You know, they're named for colors, and there's just such poetry to it all.
It certainly is. It's quite a spectrum of looks, shapes, quite a spectrum of colors, and they're certainly a very beautiful flower.
And what's your favorite, can I ask you?
Well, that would be really hard to to pick, but one of my favorites would be a anemone flora. It is a very early one that's very, very complex, a really dark red with a bulbous center and broad petals around the edges. Alba plana is the first one to really make it to the Americas, and I have it also one of the earliest to bloom, so it is blooming in my yard as we speak, and so it naturally comes to mind. But those two, with the white and the dark red and being so early, are just such a great contrast. And the third I would mention is Landreth, which is one that was lost to us for so long, and we rediscovered it. So it's a really exciting find, and one we really favor.
And how many types do you grow right there in your garden?
Well, right now I have approximately 85 camellias, and most of them are the very early types. And a few go from the latter 19th century and early 20th century. My co-author, Dr. James, has about 150, and the spectrum, time spectrum of his is a little wider than mine, but he has quite a beautiful collection.
Now, it seems to me that there are a lot of men who are interested in camellias, and there are whole camellia societies all around. So talk a little bit about those groups that come together to celebrate this flower.
Well, I can speak particularly about the Baton Rouge Camellia Society, of which I'm a member. I don't know how many members there are, but I'm sure more than 100. And this group is particularly active in collecting camellias, but also growing them, in which they do annually for sale to the public, including some of the early varieties. And they have a nice site for a lot of their work. It's in collaboration with LSU and the Rural Life Museum, centrally located in Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. And it's a group that annually gathers for meetings, social events, and also educational events. There are many groups like that throughout the South and around the country, and there's quite a lot of enthusiasm for this particular plant.
And also, in this particular book, you've assembled a lot of information. So what was it like to put this all together, Sibel? I mean, there are nursery advertisements, there are plates from books, there are beautiful reproductions of paintings. It's just lavishly illustrated, but there's so much nuts and bolts information that a person needs.
Well, you know, they had already assembled over decades a tremendous amount of information, so I wasn't the one who put it all together, obviously, but I was faced with organizing it. And I think one of the first things that I wanted to do was make sure that the reader could understand, you know, some of the terminology that they were using. For example, we mentioned Purple Dawn, the flower named for its color. Some of the flowers are named for their colors, and that has another name. I hope I'm not mispronouncing it. Wayne, you may want to step in and say its official Latin name.
Methodiana.
Oh. Right. So sometimes flowers, the camellias, were named more than once by different people in different places. And so we had different names for the same flower, and we had terminology like some flowers are imbricated, which describes their petals. Some of the flowers are very, very sculptural. You have some that are looser and more free, like a peony-shaped flower, peony-form flower, and you have an imbricated flower, which almost looks like it's carved out of wax. Mm-hmm. It's so very sculptural. I think one of the main roles that I had was encouraging the authors to describe what that terminology meant for the reader. It's a little more technical. So the book is meant for people who know a lot about the flowers and please them that we're correct, and then for people who've never heard of some of these flowers before. And also, during the 19th century, the camellia was really a kind of a star flower. Mm-hmm. It appears in lots of portraits. Some of the flowers were named after the gardeners who cultivated them, who are well-known, like the daughter of a particularly well-known Nantes gardener. Her name was Marguerite Guillon, and my favorite flower is that flower. Yeah. So the locals were quite intent on collecting them, and Martha Turnbull at Rosedown had a particularly well-developed collection, and so we have all of her notes and papers and things. And so it was really wonderful to discover all. That's one of the most important things that Wayne and Trent James did, is go out into the field and find existing camellia plants that were just out there that were still growing since they'd been planted in the 1820s or so. It's really quite a remarkable feat. So camellias continue to captivate. I think more recently, Coco Chanel was mad about them and incorporated the flower into many of her designs. She created silk versions, and that motif became incorporated by her quite prolifically in her work. So we're just glad to be able to present this material to readers now and hope that they might run out and try to plant the plants.
Keep them going. But, you know, I mean, it's so interesting how important it is to read if you're a gardener and to have your library of garden books. I think I had great delight in turning the page and seeing Jen Trimble, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think of these people who grow these plants as custodians, as stewards of mm-hmm. their history. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I don't know, I enjoyed that so much.
And I really believe that publication is preservation. Mm-hmm. Whenever we do a book like this and we gather up all this information and share it with people, it helps them to appreciate the past and preserve the what we have left of that past, whatever is important.
So are you a gardener yourself?
I actually come from a background of people who are very, very much involved in gardening. By myself, I'm not. But I did run out and buy 3 new camellia bushes for my lawn. If you drive by my house, you'll see them. And I'm waiting for them to bloom. Wayne says they'll bloom in January. He said the Sasanquas are blooming right now. So one of the wonderful things about the project is the book is appearing right at the moment that the flowers are starting to bloom.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with publisher Zabel Gontar and F. Wayne Strohmeyer, one of the co-authors of Early Camellias in Louisiana, 1825 to 1860, Long Lost Treasures Rediscovered. So talk about organizing all this information to make it useful to the average person, finding those paintings, well, for example, in plates.
As far as organizing the information, well, our goal at first was to give a background of how the project really developed in our minds, and we discussed how we came about it. Both Dr. James and I have old houses that we have restored, mm-hmm. and part of that process eventually was developing the appropriate gardens for the house. And years ago, started out with the roses and the other traditional plants that were known to be part of the houses in the early 19th century. But when it came time to plant the camellias, I was having trouble finding exact references as to the types of camellias that were used by the early 19th century Louisianians. And I consulted my friend Trent, who had been involved with camellias a lot longer than I had, and he was having some of the same issues. So the two of us decided to search out that history a little more. And so over the last 12 years or so, that's what we did. We found various individuals, particularly through the Baton Rouge Camellia Society, who had some knowledge and information about the early plants, and we added to that by going to the libraries and the documents that we could find related to the early Louisiana houses, and over time we unearthed some key documents that gave us information as to which plants the early Louisianians were planting, which camellias. And in turn, we searched out some of the early gardens that were still in existence and tried to see what was there. Some of the plants, some of the early plants that are still in existence, we were able to recognize because they had been preserved through the generations and were still available today. But others were not, that was not really the case. And the first time we observed some of these plants, we were not certain what they were. But the clues that we found in these documents were very helpful to us because they were there were lists of plants that we had not seen before. And as we uncovered some of the descriptions of those plants as well as some of the early paintings, because, of course, we didn't have photographs from back in that period, comparing the old paintings and descriptions to what we saw in the field, we were able to identify some of those plants. Then it came down to putting all this information together and going through site by site what we found in each place, and that's the way the book progressed.
Now, see, I was hoping for some exotic road trips along the way. But I think you had a few of those.
Well, we did. We did have a few. I mean, our most of our road trips were around Louisiana, particularly to the St. Francisville area. But we also visited South Carolina quite a bit in the Charleston area, and particularly at Magnolia Plantation. There's quite history and documentation of early camellias, and the stewards of that property really helped us out and shared things with us and, you know, gave us an early background with which to work.
Now, one of the things that interested me was in Susan Turner's introductory essay, and I believe that it's there, she mentions the Garden of Valcour Aim, which is one of those mythical gardens of Louisiana. And she talks about how the plants recede, how the gardens disappear, but legends live on in these places, and what courage it takes to seek out the plants themselves when they become covered over.
Yes, and unfortunately, at Valcour's old site, a lot of those plants had actually been removed, you know, after his death, I think that sometime in the latter part of the 19th century. So you cannot go back today and uncover those. But we were fortunate in that some of the landowners and old house owners in the St. Francisville area have a number of old plants that are still in existence. And they gave us access to them. We were able to study them. And it's just very interesting how they have survived all of these years. And the plants really will do that if they're in the appropriate environment. Not all of them were in actual gardening settings. Some were, but it was really exciting to find some of these plants. And even some of them we found in sites that are no longer maintained whatsoever, and just we were aware of where they might be, and actually found some plants just growing in a a mass of vines and woods, as you say. And it's very, very exciting to come across that type of thing.
Well, gardeners everywhere, well, thank you for your hard work, I can say. It's such a beautiful book. Now, Sibel, last time we talked, you were just getting your publishing company underway. So tell us a little bit about Valcour Publishing and the word Valcour, which is so lovely.
Thank you. Valcour is a new word that was created by an author named John Koenig for his book, The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows. And so it refers, and I'm quoting, the pensive nostalgia and temporality of used bookstores. And I thought, wow, I hope the books I publish end up in old bookstores someday and people
everywhere,
find them.
Everywhere.
But I do love the idea of new words, that words are always being created and language is always evolving. And especially that there are words that describe this sort of sensorial realm that we don't always have a word for it.
Right.
And I find that the Romance languages maybe have more words to describe those things, like the sensation of an old bookstore. So I sort of went in that direction. I also didn't want the name of my press to preclude any subject that I was going to work with. As you know, I'm very focused on New Orleans, and so
yes,
probably most of the books that I'll do will be about here, but that doesn't mean that they'll all be. So my next project is about the Julia Roe. My book on the Julia Roe, the one I'm publishing, is going to be forthcoming next year. Of course, you know that I work in the Julia Roe, so I'm I have a bias. It's also called The 13 Sisters. It's that wonderful row of federal townhouses on Julia Street.
And have you begun to see it in a new way now that you're working on these books?
The Julia Roe?
Yeah.
I've been there now for almost 8 years, and so I've gotten to know many people who live and work in the Roe, including George Schmidt.
Of course.
You may know him. He's a raconteur, and he's just, it's just a fire hose of information coming from him, and he's told me a lot about the Roe. And then, of course, there's, is it Eliza Ripley's Old New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
And she describes it, so, and the old photographs. I don't know if I see it in a new way, because I've been there for a while and gotten to know it pretty well, but
yeah,
certainly it reveals the layers of New Orleans history, from the time that was once a sort of an upscale neighborhood, and then it slipped far back,
right,
and became sort of a slum. And then eventually it's worked its way back to being a sort of commercial district and residential district, very mm-hmm. much so. So I feel fortunate to be there and to have gotten to know it. And hopefully the book will, that people won't just drive by. They'll understand what it means, what it really, how important it, very important it is.
But I think for a lot of people, it's their favorite street, New Orleans. So many people love that
area. That's wonderful to know.
Yeah.
I find that, it's sort of like living in New York. People in New Orleans, they sort of stay in their area. And they say, oh, it's so hard to find parking downtown.
Oh, yes. The great excuse. And do you know where you're going after that?
Well, I'm a curator, and I have an exhibition about Hunt Slonim, the painter, who spends a lot of time in Louisiana, certainly. That's opening at the Cabildo next November. And I have a couple of very exciting projects coming up. I'm doing an exhibition about the New Orleans-born Virginie Avenio Gautreau,
mm-hmm.
Otherwise known as Madame X. She was painted by John Singer Sargent, as you know, and that painting hangs in the Met. So we're going to do a show about her in New Orleans, which is going to be really wonderful. And I think there are many people in New Orleans who are actually related to her.
I know.
Her father was one of something like 11 children. He was half French and Italian. And so a lot of the people in the community will be very excited. And then I'm also working on another exhibition about the tignon, the brightly colored head wrap, largely worn by African-American and Creole women, that is still very popular today. And that is a really fascinating, object or, garment, mm-hmm. and deserves our attention, too.
What a nice publishing program, I think. There's just a little bit of everything.
Well, thank you. Well, I feel very fortunate to be from New Orleans and to have such incredible material to work with. Tremendously fortunate.
And you know how to make a beautiful book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We've been talking with publisher Sibelle Gontar and co-author F. Wayne Strohmeyer about early camellias in Louisiana, 1825 to 1860, Long Lost Treasures Rediscovered. It's by Wayne Strohmeyer and Trenton L. James. The photography is by John DeLeo, and it is published by Velacor Press. It's out Saturday, December 17th, when it makes its debut at Octavia Books from 2 to 4. Sibelle, thank you so much. Wayne, so nice to meet you.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having it, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Here in New Orleans, Publishers Zabel Gontar and F. Wayne Strohmeyer, one of the co-authors of Early Camellias in Louisiana, 1825 to 1860, Long Lost Treasures Rediscovered, appears Saturday, December 17th from 2 to 4 at Octavia Books. Scott Campbell discusses and signs the 50th anniversary edition of The Cajun Night Before Christmas, Saturday, December 17th at 11 at Garden District Bookshop. Laura Michaud reads from and signs The Ghostwriter of New Orleans, Saturday, December 17th at 2 at Blue Cypress Books. And Blue Cypress Books presents a grown-up book fair, Saturday, December 17th from 5 to 8 at The Domino, 3044 St. Claude Avenue. Neil Bodenheimer signs Cure, New Orleans Drinks and How to Mix 'em, Sunday, December 18th from 2 to 3:30 at Blue Cypress Books. Taiwan Yu, visual artist, designer, and musician, discusses and signs the Antiquarian Sticker Book, Imaginarium, Wednesday, December 28th at 6 at Octavia Books. Ellen Hardiman discusses and signs her memoir, Pioneering in New Orleans Television, Memoir of a Starstruck Kid, Wednesday, January 4th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Two local writers will make presentations for other writers on Saturday, January 7th at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The sessions for beginners or experienced writers are free of charge, open to the public. No registration. At 9:30 a.m., Bill Lofilm discusses cultivating suspense in your work, followed by Rolf Van Anders at 11 a.m., who will present yoga and the power of creativity. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, with major support from Rouse's Markets. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.